Jamie Waxman, and this is the Hot Socks Podcast. You know, I always jump right into doing interviews, I realize, in this podcast, because I get very excited when people are on hold waiting to talk with me. But this week, I'm going to spend a few minutes and let you know about what I've been doing since I moved to San Francisco. I spent I've become friendly with SF's sluttiest blogger, Vanessa Pinto, who I interviewed a few weeks back. Actually, I've become friendly with all my guests that I interview here in San Francisco, and I love it. Anyway, she took me last Friday to kink.com to their castle. It's really an armory here in San Francisco, where they hold this thing called Ultimate Surrender. It's an event. It's a sporting event, actually, not a thing, a sporting event called Ultimate Surrender that they hold on Friday nights. You need to put yourself on some list to get in. And basically what you do is you watch a wrestling match between four female wrestlers who score points for fingering and kissing and getting clothing off and oral sex and things like that. And the person with the most points at the end is the winner, the team with the most points. And the winner gets to fuck the loser. That's what happens. And it's quite fun to watch. It took me like until the final third to get into cheering things like, twist that nipple. I try to encourage the people in my row to do the wave too. But nonetheless, it was a really fun, interesting night. And what would my parents say? Can I take my dad to an Ultimate Surrender match next time he's in town? That being said, you can follow me in my adventures on Twitter at JAMYE. And you can follow my guest today on Twitter at Clarisse Thorne. That's ClariseThorn. I'm really excited to have Clarisse here. I was first introduced to her writing, her really, really wonderful writing, when I read an article about her frustration with having an orgasm. It took Clarisse a really long time to have her first orgasm, although she did have one orgasm, surprise orgasm, in her teens. But after that, it was a long time of tried and true thought and work to get her there. So we'll talk about that. That was a great story. I also love, she's a very big BDSM activist. She is a big part of the S&M community. For those who don't know what BDSM is, it stands for bondage and discipline, dominance and submission, and sadism and masochism. She is a feminist. I want to talk to her about what that means. An S&M writer and activist, and she spent years, her last few years, researching the world of pickup artistry, another world that I am fascinated by. Clarisse is also the editor of the sex and relationships section at a website called Role Reboot. We're going to talk to her about sex, pickup artists, her extensive and extended struggle and tale of reaching orgasm, what it means to be a feminist, and what it means to identify your sexual orientation as BDSM. Clarisse Thorne, thank you for being here on the Hot Socks Podcast, and I'm really delighted to talk with you. You and I were just talking for a moment about the pickup artist world and the fact that you sort of got drawn in because you were writing about masculinity, and then men started commenting on your blog. Were these pickup artists that were commenting on your blog?
Yeah, well, a couple of them were pickup artists or guys who have sort of researched pickup. There's actually a lot of guys in that subculture who read the material or research it, but don't identify as pickup artists. It's really interesting.
Is that what deciphers the identity? Is it that they don't feel like they manipulate women in the same way or use the tools in the same fashion that someone who's using them for pickup artistry does?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think, right. I mean, the whole phrase pickup artist just has this sort of sleaziness to it, you know? And I think there's a lot of guys who are looking at this material who really don't want to be associated with that. Or who find it interesting for other reasons, you know?
Well, I have to say that not just as, you know, the whole idea, the words pickup artistry kind of assume this sleaziness, this air of sleaziness, but there was a photo that you had placed in one of your posts about the pickup artist industry, showing the men in, I want to call it cock suits, but they weren't. It was like chicken, what?
The peacocking.
Yeah, the peacocking. That's what it was.
Infamous photo. It's so funny.
And that makes them look like real cheesy, weird men. And those are like the top of the game guys.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that, and I talk about this a lot in my book. You're going to hear me say that a lot.
No, and say the name of your book and everything again. So
I talk about this a lot in my book. I'm sorry?
The name of your book is?
It is called Confessions of a Pickup Artist Chaser.
Woohoo!
Hideous Men. And it is available on Amazon and Smashwords right now for you to purchase.
And you're about to put it out, too, in a print edition, right?
In paper, yes. The paper edition is going to be more expensive because the costs are really high when you're self-publishing. It's a long book. It's like 140,000 words. So, I mean, paper, you just can't do that for very little money. But we'll also give you a coupon for the book so that you can get a little bit cheaper at the end of the show.
One of the things I actually really appreciate about you as a writer, going all over the place right now, is that you are not afraid to write a well-worded and well-said blog post, but of length. Like, that, you know, you don't see a lot of blog posts online anymore that are personal, that are just really thought out and you know, written to the length that they need to be. And your posts, they're so easy to read, and they really, you go into so much detail. Does it take you a really long time to write each of those blog posts?
It takes a while.
Okay, good.
One of the things that I've sort of learned is that I just can't write short. I just can't do it. And I've actually usually thought of this as a drawback for myself as a blogger, because what people want, I mean, they want the point to be made in like 250 to 500 words. And the fact is that, like, I mean, I can make a point that quickly, but I can't support it the way I want to, or like explore it. And I always want to say so much. Like, if I'm going to take on a topic, especially if it's about sexuality or gender, it's just going to take me a while to kind of excavate that. So, I mean, my shortest blog posts are like, you know, 800 to 1,000 words. And I think that is difficult for some people, but I'm really glad that you appreciate it.
I first was drawn to your writing a post you had done about the extensive search for your orgasm. And I thought it was just so well written. And, you know, there's something I remembered about how you thought out the one time you had an accidental orgasm or a surprise orgasm when you were with a boyfriend, and you thought, well, chocolate's an aphrodisiac, so that could have done something. And then there's the position, and then there's the fact that I was exhausted. And I thought that, like, this is the type of brain I relate to often. I get accused of thinking a lot. And it was like, wow, I love that type of thinking. You know, you really look into every aspect of something before you make your conclusion, which I can't say I do for myself all the time. So,
well, I do my best. Yeah,
I'm very appreciative of that. So how did you become a writer on topics like, well, I mean, when did you start identifying as a feminist? Let's back up there.
Identifying as a feminist, that's interesting. You know, there's been a little bit of controversy about me in the feminist blogosphere at the beginning of this year, and it's really made me think about it a lot. My mom and I were talking about it, actually, and she was just like, man, like, the things that other feminists are saying about you, like, I used to think that when people complained about feminists that it was this, like, stereotype and, like, nobody really acts like that. She was just like, the way some people are acting towards you, like, I think that that stereotype is real and those people exist, and it's really kind of appalling. And she was, and the other thing that she was saying, she was just like, and honestly, I've always been very surprised that you identified so strongly as a feminist. And I was like, but mom, like, you're like the strongest, most independent, you know, most incredible woman I know. Like, what do you mean you're surprised that I identify as a feminist? Like, you raised me. Like, aren't you a feminist? And she was like, well, I don't know. I've never really identified with it the same way you did. And that was just so startling for me to hear from my mom, who is this just like brilliant, strong woman. And it really made me think about it a lot. Like, we sort of talked it out. When I initially started thinking about BDSM and sexuality, I sort of instinctively knew that it felt like a conflict with feminism, but I was like, that can't be right. Like, part of me was just like, that can't be right. Like, surely I can still be someone who, like, values equal rights and, like, thinks women are people and, like, identifies with all these, you know, critiques of gender, and still be into BDSM. Like, this can't be mutually exclusive. So I sort of went online and started looking for blogs about it, and I found a couple that were really smart, and I was like, I really need to be in this conversation, so I started my own. And from the beginning, I was very careful about identifying as a pro-BDSM feminist because of that conflict, because I really wanted to sort of reclaim feminism through that conflict and to explore what the conflicts within that are and what the harmonies are. And so at first, I mean, it was just that I wanted to write about sex. I wanted to write about BDSM and explore my experience with BDSM. And I felt like I was a feminist, even though I hadn't really thought about it. I had like a come to Jesus moment. It was just obvious to me, like, clearly I'm a feminist. Like all of the criticism that I identify with as feminist, you know, like all these amazing people that I think have done amazing things in the field of gender identify as feminists, so I must be a feminist. But it was really over the next few years, I really had a crash course in sort of how people will reject the term and how people will claim it and how different feminists take it differently and sort of the things that get people almost thrown out of feminism and stuff like that. So it was interesting because other feminist bloggers noticed me pretty quickly and started linking to my work. And so it was partly that I had sort of deliberately taken on this identity, but it was also partly that the bloggers who welcomed me the most, there were sex bloggers, but there were also feminist bloggers. And because all along it had been sort of this agenda of mine to try and like settle these quote unquote conflicts with BDSM and feminism, I saw this opportunity to sort of go into feminist spaces and make this clearer, right? Like help people think this through who were just reading about feminism. And so ultimately I managed to sort of get posting access at Feminist, and I'm not writing there regularly anymore, but it was sort of like a mutual evolution. Like I was writing this stuff that I think called out to a lot of feminists, but it was also that I saw their criticism and that was what spoke to me. It wasn't that I like sat down and worked it out with principles. Does that make sense?
Yeah. There were a couple of things there. Cause I actually myself, I go back and forth with the word, and I know these past few months there had been some controversy around a mutual friend of ours. At least I think he's a mutual friend. and this whole drudging through what is feminist and the whole backlash in the community, and that I'm not honestly involved in at all, really, in the sense that I don't post for feminist places. In fact, they dredged up something about me in that time. That was the one time someone asked me. I am president of an organization called Feminist for Free Expression, and I have always struggled around the word because of what it means. It means so many different things to so many different people. Like, so to hear your mom say, "Well, I never really identified with that word," I feel the same way. I'm a really strong, independent woman, and I believe in lots of things that feminists believe in, and I believe in feminism. But I had never really used that word until it was like forced on me by being in this organization. And so I wrote something about, well, I never considered myself that. And then, I mean, now I feel this is 7 years later, and I'm not going to say stupid about it. I feel I would carefully choose my words more wisely next time. But it really drew my attention back to the fact that this word is so fraught and so loaded and means so many different things. And there's all these different waves of feminism, and in each wave it means so many different things.
Yeah.
That it's really a hard concept to define. And I mean, I know writing about pickup artists has gotten you a lot of slack on one side, because it is a very misogynistic attitude towards women in some parts. I mean, and right. so there really is that battle, but like you said, I mean, there's lots of places I want to go with you here, but like you said about pickup artistry, there's a fascination too. I mean, studying it as a social science is so interesting because there is so much gender and power play in there.
Yeah, there's so much to it. And it's also, I mean, ever since I began writing too, it's always been about trying to reconcile these things that appear so different with each other, right? So at first it was BDSM and feminism, and then later I got into sort of like masculinity and feminism, and like what does it mean to be a feminist man? And that was actually one of the first times that I was encountering pickup artists on the internet, was when a couple of really smart ones sort of came upon my discussions of masculinity and were like, oh, this is awesome, like here's what pickup has taught me about this, here's how we can talk about this, right? And I just find it so frustrating that people police the boundaries of feminists so aggressively, and that people make it so hard to be a feminist who has anything positive to say about certain things.
Mm.
And just like, yeah, and just the different types of attacks within feminism too, like this recent thing that happened, like people were saying like, oh, like, I mean, I had sort of thought like, oh, it's great. Like I've managed to like be this pro BDSM sex positive feminist and like not get that much flack for it, like within feminism, this is awesome. And then like during this controversy, this recent controversy, people were saying like, oh, like you give blowjobs, like you suck cock, like all this stuff. Like I was just like, really, this is an acceptable feminist critique now? Like I thought that like we were past that, you know?
Yeah. There, Betty Dodson taught me this, and I wish I could remember right now the term, but about this constant spiral that we do in our lives. It was a concept that it's not hers either, but where we're continuously going up the pole, but we're spinning around it. So we keep coming back to the same issues, just higher up on the pole. Mm-hmm. And I kind of see that sometimes with, I see it with the feminist movement, but I see it with the sex movement too. I mean, you have an S&M coming out story, because you, if we go back now to your search for your orgasm, you discovered something about yourself that you, like you said, you write now about BDSM and feminism and masculinity and sexuality, and you had to come to terms with your own sexuality to deal with your orgasmic capacity and other things. So, can you tell us a little bit about your S&M coming out?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's all written up. The article is called Love Bites and S&M Coming Out Story. And then you can also find the orgasm article. It's called A Unified Theory of Orgasm. So those are both posted in tons of places across the internet. You can find them really easily.
And you can find them on your site, which is ClariseThorne.com. Under your, at least one of them, if not both, are under your top hits, right?
Yeah,
greatest hits.
They're in, if you look at like my greatest hits section, and they're also in my sidebar, because I think they are probably some of my most important articles. But I mean, briefly, the S&M coming out process was just like, I mean, it was just like basically, it was two things, right? On the one hand, it was this narrative in my own head where I was just like, oh my God, I thought I was like an independent, rational, feminist woman. How can I be into all this crazy, fucked up power shit, you know? And I think in retrospect, I mean, it's not entirely clear to me what was, where that all came from, but I think part of it was just sort of general sex stigma. Like general being freaked out about sex, and I was sort of intellectualizing it and making it into this feminist thing. If that makes sense.
What freaked you out about sex?
I mean, not anymore, right? But like, I think that everybody has a lot of triggers around sexuality.
Sure.
And that people sort of have a lot of like reactions, and a lot of the time people intellectualize those and like make claims about like what this means about your politics or whatever, right?
Sure.
In a way that kind of is just like, like, I look back on what I was thinking on all these, like, different concerns that I was having, and I'm just like, basically, the bottom line is that I was freaked out. And because I intellectualized things, I intellectualized it in this way. and I'm, like, drawn to feminism. But, I mean, again, I do think there are particular conflicts with BDSM and feminism. And then the other thing was just that the person who kind of introduced me to BDSM wasn't necessarily the best guide or the best person to have introduced me to it, in that he wasn't good at sort of like being there for me or helping me talk it out. And I had to sort of deal with this like obsession with him along with the fact of the BDSM itself. So that's kind of the heart of the S&M coming out story that I wrote.
So what would you say to somebody who is in a position of wanting to come out around BDSM and finding a safe, you have a whole resource, right? List of places on your website to go and research.
A lot of BDSM meetups that take place in cafes and are just like people meeting in cafes. And it's like the safest thing you can imagine. You know, there's a coming out story by this one Chicago writer. Her name is Annabelle River. And she wrote up her coming out story a few years ago. And it's really funny because she's talking about how she goes to her first BDSM meetup and she's like alone and she's like completely freaked out, right? She's just like, oh my God, I'm going to go meet a bunch of sadomasochists. Like, what is the matter with me? Like, I'm going to be like stabbed and dumped in an alley. But like, she's so like driven, like she can't not do it, you know? So she goes to this cafe and like walks into the cafe, and there's like four people there playing Scrabble. And she's like, is this? And they're like, yes, yes, this is the BDSM meetup. Welcome. It's just like, it's so funny, right? Because people have all these like stereotypes and like we're supposed to be these like dark, like evil cutouts, right? These silhouettes and shadows of badness, like always clad in body hugging fetish gear and all this stuff. And like the reality is that like we sit around and play Scrabble most of the time. Maybe not most of the time, but like sometimes. And like it's so silly that people have all this anxiety. I mean, I think, right, you should exercise the same amount of caution that you would about going to any unfamiliar event or unfamiliar place if you're going to go out to a BDSM meetup. But in my experience, and I've gone to a lot of different unfamiliar BDSM meetups in a lot of different states and cities, and most of the time I have done it alone. Mm. And nothing bad has ever happened to me.
And it's true. I mean, you said something very interesting when you were observing the pickup artist community and the S&M community, that when it comes to negotiation, that with BDSM, it's very verbal. Like, you've done lots of classes on verbal communication. Mm-hmm. But with the pickup artist community, it's really nonverbal. Like, it's what you don't hear that's what is being said.
Right. And that's what's really interesting is that there, I think a lot of the time, feminist sex educators are very much in this mode where we're just like, the culture is so nonverbal about sex, and that is fucked up because it is bad for consent, and we need to push back against that. And to some extent, that is true. I think that it really is important that people learn how to talk verbally about sex and, like, take ownership of their desires and, like, you know, have like, a clear idea and a clear conversation about it. But the truth is that every sexual interaction is a mixture of verbal and nonverbal signals. And one thing that I noticed recently, when I started, like, you know, looking into pickup artistry and then trying to sort of bring back some of the stuff that I'd learned and, like, was thinking about to the feminist communities and S&M communities was the amount of pushback, not just because pickup artistry is perceived as so, like, sleazy and whatever, but also because some of the stuff that they say just challenges these ideas that we have about consent and about how that should be negotiated, quote-unquote. And so, for example, I tried to bring up nonverbal communication at a BDSM meetup about a month ago. Maybe it was 2 months ago. I go to this BDSM discussion group, and I'm like, let's talk about nonverbal communication. I'm really curious, you guys, about how you guys negotiate this, because I know there's a lot of nonverbal communication for me in my encounters, but I'm having trouble pinning it down. And I had to sort of, like, describe what I was talking about a couple of times before people were really able to get it. And then the first person who responded was someone who was new, right? So she was just like, oh, I see what you're saying. So, like, for example, when I'm first doing this, I kind of look for a certain type of shudder or whatever. And I was like, yes, let's talk about that. But then a more experienced person in the conversation shut it down completely. And that person was just like, we can't talk about this because what we need to be doing is encouraging people to use verbal communication.
That's interesting.
And I was just like, okay, like, I'm not going to, like, fight you. But, like, I mean, and I, again, I, there were just so many things that I wanted to say to that person that I wasn't really sure how to put together in the moment or, like, get into, because I felt like I could understand where they were coming from, but at the same time I was just like, at some point we're going to have to talk about this, like, because...
But I think that's what makes somebody a better partner in whatever, if it's BDSM or if it's sex or if it's work, to be able to actually know and read your partner based on not just verbal communication. Because yes, I understand the importance of it in a scene, but for some people, that's still not always going to be the easiest thing for them to do.
Right.
So it reminds me of almost like religion, where someone says, no, we're not talking about this because Christianity is right and it has to be done this way. And until we teach that to everybody, it doesn't matter if you want to talk about Judaism or Buddhism. We've got to see Christianity first.
Yeah, it's a very sort of aggressive way of looking at it, a very zealous way of looking at it. And I get very uncomfortable with situations like that.
You said you even sometimes identify your sexual orientation as BDSM. So what is the community like where you are now?
In Chicago?
Yes.
I think it's pretty good. I mean, we have some local dungeons, lifestyle dungeons, and also professional dungeons. And there's a whole bunch of meetups and stuff like that. I kind of go in and out of the scene personally. I went to a party at GD2, which is one of the local lifestyle places, this past weekend. And I go to the meetups sometimes, but the area where I live, it's not necessarily easy to get out. And I also just have a lot of social obligations and a lot of other things that I do with my time as well. And one thing that I've sort of realized as I got older was that, I mean, when I was younger, it was very much like, after I spent a few years sort of coming to terms with my BDSM sort of desires and, like, needs, there was a while where I was very much like, I'm going to date guys within the BDSM community, like, that is what I'm going to do. But then I was just like, wait a minute, I have a lot of interests that aren't BDSM. And like, there are lots of guys who like are into activism and music and art and all these other things that I'm really into and could also be great partners, and I shouldn't just like ignore them, you know? And like,
that brings up though an interesting point, because like for me, I know sexual compatibility is very important for me to be in a relationship, because
right.
I can get a lot of the other stuff from other people in my life. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
yeah, I get that. I mean, not everybody who's into BDSM is in the BDSM scene. And honestly, you know, I ran a project for the Leather Archives, which is the world's only BDSM museum and is in fact in Chicago. And the point of this project was to try and find people who practice BDSM who are not in the BDSM community, like the public community. And to some, I mean, I learned a fair bit from that project. A lot of it sort of confirmed my suspicions, honestly. Which is that there's certain sort of like standards in the BDSM community or like stereotypes that some people just like aren't into, and that's why they don't get out there and do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also just like some people are busy or whatever, right? And some of the like most perverse, like kinky motherfuckers that I have hooked up with have been guys who I didn't meet through the BDSM community and who would never go to a BDSM meetup, right? Like one of them is actually in my book, like Confessions of a Pickup Artist case, here I include this, a whole case study of this one relationship with this one guy who I met at like an activist event in San Francisco, right?
Is and this like, Adam?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he is like incredibly, like he is so in S&M, right? But like he just doesn't, he's just not going to like put on like leather and go to a leather event. He's just not, that's just not what he does. He has a whole bunch of other stuff that he does.
So would you want to be with a partner who is into S&M at least, even if they're not involved in the scene?
Yeah, although lately I've been sort of experimenting a lot with polyamory. That's sort of been the last couple of years for me. I've been thinking that I'd like to do that sort of indefinitely. One of the consequences of that, I think, is that I can have sexual partners who maybe aren't like the same, like 100% perfect, like awesome match, you know? And like, it's not the end of the world, right? Like,
it's a really good point.
You get that with other people.
So what made you interested in polyamory?
It's funny. It's actually more of a question of why it took me so long to get into it. I first started reading, you know, my dad read The Ethical Slut when I was in like fourth grade.
Your dad had a book about squirting on top of the bookshelf. That like blew my mind that you were like, yeah, I found my father's book on squirting. I'm like, what happened after that? But
my parents both have a really strong interest in sexuality. And it's funny, because they both think, like, they both know all about, like, my identity as Clarice Thorne and, like, what I do with my time, and they both think it's completely awesome, which is really great. So my parents actually had a surprising number of sort of, like, weirdly sophisticated sex books around when I was a kid, and I never, like, thought about it at the time. Like, it took me a while to realize how into it they were and how much they were, like, thinking about it. But that sort of explains where I come from a little bit, I think. But yeah, so like I came upon like The Ethical Slut when I was like in fourth grade, and I like stole it from my dad and like read it, or I read part of it. And, I got this feeling from it that I also got from reading Heinlein later when I was in my teens, cause I went through like a Heinlein phase.
Okay.
Yeah. Where like all of this writing about polyamory, I was like, well, this sounds cool for them, but like, I was really frustrated by how little respect they paid to certain emotions of people who like would feel uncomfortable with it. And I felt like there was a lot of disrespect for people who were trying to set boundaries or who felt very anxious and uncomfortable with it. So like a lot of the time, both Heinlein and The Ethical Slut talk about jealousy as if it's this like terrible thing that like must be defeated at all costs. And like, if you're feeling it, there's something wrong with you. And I really don't like that. And I think that that is something that keeps people away from polyamory a lot of the time. It certainly kept me away from it. Just that sort of sense that like, if you are experiencing this particular type of emotion, there's something wrong with you, and or this idea that polyamory is like better or like more evolved or like more advanced than like other ways of structuring your relationships. And I've come to this place where I think that there are a lot of different reasons that people have different relationships, you know, like polyamorists and swingers and monogamous people, all just like these different types of relationships have different benefits and drawbacks. And it's not very productive to just be like, this one is better. And when I was younger also, I think there were a lot of things that I just really wanted out of my relationships that I got more easily from monogamous relationships. Like I really needed a certain type of like support and like stability and like, I really need to be able to trust my partner. I had one partner when I was like 19 who pushed for polyamory a lot. And I was like, yeah, I guess we can do this. But then like he cheated on me and like all this stuff. And it was this kind of thing where it was like, well, I don't think this is a problem with polyamory, but like I'm not doing polyamory with you because we're already having all these other problems and polyamory is just really complicated and difficult. And how are we going to negotiate that if we can't negotiate all this other stuff?
I think that happens a lot, and I think that's where polyamory gets some of its confusion and, I want to say, bad rap.
Yeah. Like, people sort of look at these people who are polyamorous who behave really badly, and they're just like, oh, well, poly can't work. And it's like, no, it's just difficult.
It's just, you know, what I've noticed about it, and for me, it doesn't work, and it's because of, I have just this really strong emotional monogamy thing in my energy and my body that makes it almost like too difficult to even just think about one person. And I'm obsessed with relationships. So it hasn't worked for me yet, but I was on a panel, at an event called Lightning in a Bottle last year in Los Angeles. And it was a mostly polyamorous panel. And then me, who identified it as monogamish. And, someone said on the panel, the problem with monogamy is that people cheat. And I said, no, see, the problem is that people aren't talking, whether it's polyamory or monogamy, because I could look at you and say the problem with polyamory is people use it to get out of relationships without, you know, or to get to feel like they have more freedom in a relationship without talking about what freedom they want.
Cheat in polyamorous relationships too. Like, where is this idea that like only monogamous people can cheat? Like, people cheat all the time in polyamorous relationships. They lie to their partners. Like, they don't obey like the relationship understandings.
Yeah.
That shit pisses me off.
Yeah. No, I am so there. Like, I got right on the microphone right after that comment and was like, no, we need to clarify this because this is a communication thing and other things, of course, you know, there's probably other issues going on, but I'm not a therapist, at least not yet. So as you started to absorb and investigate the pickup artist world to write really a book that I've only started to delve into, Confessions of a Pickup Artist Chaser. Again, like, you're, besides what I like about your feminist critiques is that I do have a hard time reading some feminist critiques and theory. With your writing, I never have, I don't ever find that. I find that you really look at things from all angles. You call out people who call you out, and you admit when you know, like, you put a link to some guy who sounds like a major a-hole named Darth Vader in some ways, and you say, I'm putting this link up there with the acknowledgement that his stuff is misogynistic, and but he is highly intelligent, and he says things that people should read. And I really like that lens that you come from. So when did you meet your first pickup artist?
So this is in the book too. It was actually really funny because this one pickup artist came to one of the local S&M meetups, and I actually wasn't there when this happened in Chicago. But my boyfriend at the time told me about it later. Like, he was just like, did you hear about the pickup artist? And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, this guy who came to the S&M meetup, like, apparently he was so slick that like the minute he walked in the door, all the guys put their arms around their girlfriends. He was like, this guy, like, apparently he teaches men how to seduce women. Apparently this is a whole subculture and a community. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I just sort of forgot about it for a while. But then the guy came to one of my events and he was like, hi, like, I'm James Amaru. And I was like, oh, you're the pickup artist. And he was like, yeah, that's me. And he turned out to be this really interesting guy, really smart guy, who actually came to a few of my other events and, like, invited me out for coffee, and, like, we were talking, and I was just like, wow, you're really smart. And what he told me, this was, like, my first contact with that community, and the thing that he told me right off the bat was, like, this community primarily functions to teach extremely awkward, shy, like, lovelorn men how to talk to girls. And it does all these other things too, and there's a whole bunch of like heteronormative weirdness about it, but like primarily what it does is it helps guys who don't know how to have relationships have relationships. And I was like, is this really the best way to go about that? And he was just like, well, maybe not. In all honesty, a lot of my money these days, he told me, comes from deprogramming guys who have gotten into the subculture. So like literally this guy, he has a coaching business, and then he has another business where guys who have been in the pickup artist subculture come to him and ask him to like help them get rid of the fucked up attitudes they've absorbed from like this subculture so that they can like relate to girls again and have like a reasonable relationship with some girl they're really into. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, that has to happen.
Who were like commenting on my blog, but he was a good entry point, I think.
I feel like reading. So I was given the game to read as like, here, just sit in the corner and read something, and I couldn't put it down. Neil Strauss, he did just an excellent job of immersing himself in that world and then being seduced by the world. And yeah. And I think that that's the most amazing part for me is that it doesn't matter. I mean, obviously I know you. There's a chapter in your book where you interview him, which also gets some flack for some of the things that he says. But it really is amazing, the seduction level. Like, it can take anybody who has just a little lack of self-esteem and, you know, really create this whole new persona for them.
Well, it can, right? I mean, it doesn't do that for everyone. And it's definitely the kind of thing where Neil Strauss and a lot of the other top pickup coaches play down a lot of the work that they put in to get there. I mean, with someone like Neil Strauss, right? I mean, he went out for hours every night for years to get to be like
the number two
seduction machine, right? And it's like, it's not fun, right? Like, I think people sort of have these ideas about pickup artistry where they're just like, oh yeah, like there's like a magic bullet and like you learn it and like women will fall at your feet. And like, it's not true. Like, it's just a whole big set of theories. And then for the most part, it's practice. And those theories and those approaches don't even work for everybody. So there's tons and tons of guys who get into this subculture who never take a girl home, right? And so I think it does have this very overblown reputation, and the marketing is extremely weird in a lot of ways too. I talk about that in my book too, just sort of like the way the marketing is laid out and like what people are actually looking for and what these coaches are actually teaching, and how different guys are approaching, like how different sort of schools of seduction function. But the bottom line is that, like, really what they are doing at the heart of it, for the most part, is going out all the time and interacting with people constantly for hours and hours and hours in order to improve, like, their social calibration is what they call it, to become better calibrated and better able to read interactions.
Well, that's why I think it's so important to read this.
I mean, there's nothing terrible about that. It's just practice. Like, so...
And that's one of the reasons. I mean, I was so drawn to the game, I started to tell everybody they needed to read it, because whether or not you're going to use the practice, there was a lot in there that made you a more effective, I don't want to say manipulator necessarily, but even business person, you know, right, to get what you want. And I think, I mean, that's what I'm most excited. Well, I liked the game, but I love the fact that you go and dissect it and actually live it in your own way without deciding to become a dating coach and do all of that, so that you have the perspective of like really looking like you do at things so well, and then really taking what's done and without judgment, you just break it down to as you see it. I mean, there's even that challenge you have. You see, you said some guys don't ever go home and get sex, but I was really kind of turned off when I read the part about David and him taking you home without asking. I mean, is that normal pickup artist behavior where you don't think that's where you were going out to eat and then you were at his house?
What he did was, and this excerpt was actually republished on Nerve and on my own blog.
Oh,
so
okay.
For anybody who you know, wants to get a little taste of the book before you read it, you can actually search the internet for Nerve Confessions of a Pickup Artist Chaser, or look for like Clarice Thorne, David pickup artist or whatever, and you'll find this excerpt with David where like we were at this club. And, like, this pickup artist instructor was just like, hey, do you want to go get something to eat? And I was like, sure. So, like, we leave. And, like, 10 minutes later, we're nowhere near, like, an eating area of the city. And I was just like, where are we going? And then I was like, are you taking me to your apartment? And he was like, yeah. And I was just like, are you for real? Like, I read that you guys do shit like this. But, like, I never actually thought that you would do this, right? And it was just, and the whole night was just like this, like, long ongoing process of him just being super pushy and like just kind of an asshole, and me just being like, dude, like, I am not here to have sex with you. Like, I am here to talk to you, and also stop it. Me off. So it was really funny. What was especially funny about David too was that he was really into me by the end of it. Like, he was like texting me for like months after I left the city, and like was just like super into me, and I was just like, like, you treated me in like exactly the wrong way for me to like trust you and like want to be your friend, you know?
Does he still ever get in touch with you?
Yeah, no, you know what's really funny is that he got in touch with me when the book was published. He was like, hey, I heard that you released a book. Congratulations. And I was like, yeah, you're in it. And he was like, really? And then he read it and he thought it was like the funniest thing ever.
Is he still doing pickup artistry?
I actually don't know. When he texted me about the book, I was just like, how are you? Like, how's it going? And he was just like, I'm great. Like, I'm dating a really awesome girl, like all this stuff. And I was just like, you know, I'm really glad that you're happy. Congratulations. And he was like, well, hey, if you're in San Francisco again, like come out, like I'll buy you a drink. Like, I know we're not supposed to do that, but I'll buy you a drink. And I was like, word.
Well, you said it too. His golden rule was he didn't take girls' numbers. Like everybody has that line where it's like becomes.
He's like, he didn't take girls' numbers unless he planned to call them. That was so funny. Like he was like, yes, this is like my ethical boundary is that like I will like sleep with this girl, but I won't take her number unless I intend to call her. And I was like, okay.
I wonder though, for how much of the community does the ethical boundary part, or even just the ethical part, eventually come out? Because you mentioned something else too about there are two types of ways that guys look at themselves: their inner worth and their outer worth. Is that
right?
And that when
this whole concept of inner game, okay. Which is like, so outer game is like the sort of catch-all term for. Behavioral tactics or like dress or like your appearance, right? So like if you're physically attractive, that's outer game. Or if you're wearing a certain piece of clothing, or if you're doing if you're performing a certain tactic, then that's outer game, right? But inner game is this catch-all term for like your sort of like emotional state, or like where you are in your life, or like what kind of things you do with your time, or like what your interests are. So a lot of the stuff that they write about inner game is total bullshit and is ridiculous. But a lot of it, and like, is bad for you too, because they'll have these sort of like weird artificial ways of trying to like pump up your emotional states, the girls or whatever, right? But then a lot of those conversations are also these weird sort of like paths that point to real self-development, I think, for a lot of guys. And actually, my favorite pickup artist, Mark Manson, who I quote a lot in the book,
right.
Just wrote a blog post about inner game. Like the other day that went up on his website where he was just like, guys, the way we talk about inner game, it's bullshit. Like, here's what we should really be focusing on. And his whole thing is like focusing on masculinity and ideas of masculinity and trying to get men to sort of like be like more thoughtful and more in touch with their emotions. And that's like, and it's funny because he was originally a pickup artist coach when I interviewed him for the book. And when I was like bouncing all these ideas off him for the book, Confessions of a Pickup Artist Chaser, Mark Manson was still a pickup artist coach, but towards the end of last year, he just decided he didn't really want to do that anymore, and he just wanted to focus on his website and be a writer. And his website is called postmasculine.com. And, like, his whole thing is trying to deconstruct and understand masculinity.
Huh.
So he's really made this whole journey where, like, he started in pickup artistry and, like became really good at picking up girls and then taught other men to pick up girls, and now he's just like, you know, I think that is great, I guess, maybe, but like, it's not really the all end all. And like, there's all these other ideas of masculinity and like thoughtfulness about gender and about relating to other people that we should be focusing on instead.
Amen. He's also the guy who was talked about if you don't get sex on that date, because there's this, one of the things that disgusts me most is all the tactics for last minute resistance, LMR tactics.
Right, yeah, a whole chapter on those, basically.
Yeah, so these are the tactics that pickup artists will do when they see that their ship is sinking and they may not get laid. And so they have these last minute ways to try and woo the woman. And is he the one who said that it's better to just walk away and not expect sex and that she'll trust you more and that you need to be okay with that?
Yeah, that was him. And he has this whole thing where he's just like, guys, like, listen to me. Like, I know it might not sound intuitive, but like, you have to not pressure her. Like, stop it.
How often does
I was just like, you're awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to be checking him out as soon as we get off this podcast. He sounds pretty amazing. How often do guys start with the line, like the question? I was on the subway once and some guy came up to me and asked a question about his friend and some girlfriend, and all I thought was the game, I know you're playing.
Who lies more? Yeah, so funny. You know, it's so hard to know how often people do certain things in the pickup artist subculture, right? Like, because, like, how do you even get statistics on, like, what they're actually doing and, like, what is actually going on? Oh, I mean, a lot of the time, that's what they're doing. Like, the ones who are, like, really first getting into it, like, the whole point of it is to, like, go out to these clubs and just practice approaching people, practice approaching people, practice approaching people. And some people do that using these, like, canned pickup lines, and some people do that just, like, making something up or, like, some random line or whatever, but, like, just something about the environment, right? It's, or, like, nice skirt or whatever, right? Like, but the point of all that is really just to get yourself comfortable with talking to people unexpectedly.
What was the best pickup artistry you saw while you were doing your research?
That's a good question. I didn't, You know, there's, I was talking to the pickup artist Adam Lyons when I was in Austin, actually, after I released the book.
Oh, right. You were just at South by Southwest.
Yeah,
on a
I was
panel.
Just at South by Southwest because I was on a panel about pickup artists and feminism. So it was me, and it was a feminist pickup artist coach who's a girl, and it was Amanda Marcotte, who's a really high-profile feminist writer, and it was Adam Lyons, who's a really high-profile pickup artist coach who lives in Austin. So I was, like, hanging out with Adam Lyons afterwards, and I was like, hey, Adam, can I talk to you a little bit? Like, I'd like to get some more of your perspective. He was like, sure. So we go and we hang out at this apartment where he's running a boot camp for a bunch of guys. And there, and it was right after the boot camp was over, so there was all this, like, leftover pizza and, like, guys sitting around really tired, and his wife is there. And so Adam Lyons goes in and, like, he's talking to his wife while I'm sort of eating some leftovers. And he's, like, he's telling her this story of how he had obtained this huge box full of, like, 30 pies for free. These, like, miniature, like, really delicious, like, mixed berry pies. And he was just like, I went into this bakery and I, like, went and talked to the baker and I was like, I love your pie, all this stuff. And he's, like, talking, but, like, this whole series of sort of, like, explanations of, like, how he thoroughly charmed this baker until finally the baker was just like, here, have a box full of 30 pies.
Oh my God.
Right. How do you even do that, man? Like, all right, awesome. I mean, it's hard, like, when you're actually hearing about it like that or, like, watching it go down, it just doesn't look sleazy, right? Like, it doesn't look terrible. It's just like, oh, or, like, another guy, like, I was hanging out with in San Francisco at one point, like, I went out for, like, a whole night with a bunch of these guys who were just, like, going out and, like, trying to pick up girls. One of them's pretty good at it on the street. Like, he's really good at what they call, like, street game. And so, like, all he would do is, like, see some girl that he thought was attractive, like, crossing the street, he'd, like, run after her and, like, tap her on the shoulder and, like, talk to her and get her number. And, like, it's not, like, this terrible, evil thing when you just see it up close. It's just somebody starting a conversation and either getting shut down or, like, getting a phone number. That's, like, the end of it.
And honestly, from the other end of it, it's not a terrible thing to get the attention. I mean, to get lured and manipulated, sure, maybe not so fun. But to actually just, if you can experience the attention and the, if it is genuine, like the genuinity of whatever it is that this person in some way is trying to at least convey, if not because they're trying to have sex with you, there is, I mean, it is nice to be recognized no matter who you are for, you know, the fact that, like, you had once that your glasses were being glued together. Like, just for someone to notice a detail about you can be nice or charming or sweet. Are you going to continue to study this community? Are you going to continue to stay actively involved in the pickup artist sort of scene in a way?
No, I don't think so. I mean, at the end of the book, I kind of talk about this, how it sort of took me a while to kind of get out of it, but eventually I was just like, no, I'm done here. And like, it, like, sort of my, like, big come to Jesus moment at the very end of it was when I had already given a lecture at this one seduction convention, and the guy who ran the convention gets in touch with me again, and he's like, hey, do you want to be the official wingwoman at the upcoming, like, Lollapalooza pickup thing? And I was just like, and I accepted, and then I was just like, oh my God, I cannot do this. I just, like, felt, like, sick and, like, horrible, because, like, it really was kind of taking this weird toll on me, and I was just like, dude, I can't be involved in this subculture anymore. I'm sorry. And so I still know guys in that community, and, like, I'll talk to them, and, like, some of them are my friends now. And I like, go to them sometimes even for, like, advice on relationships or, like, whatever. But I just didn't find it a good place for me to hang out extensively. And I feel like I've sort of learned everything I went in there to learn.
I think what is really valuable about the book and the, you know, is that you're continuing a dialogue. You're opening it up in avenues that haven't necessarily been explored before. You're coming in as somebody who's really studied the scene, you know, as a cisgender woman. And I think that there's maybe one or two other things out there that, you know, are fascinating like this that people have studied, but you really, your voice on the internet is so strong, and your voice in general is so strong that you're allowing there to be more open space and a dialogue to inspect and dissect the culture and to move on from it and just be aware of it as well.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff that I want to write about too, right? So it's one of those things where it's like, people are like, all right, so are you going to keep doing this? And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, if I hear a really interesting pickup artist critique, I'll probably read it, you know, like I can understand it now, but like, I don't see any reason to be really deep into it. There's a lot of other things that I want to do with my time. And I think that one of the interesting things about sort of the modern world is, like, in America at least, is all these like weird subcultures and how like they've become so balkanized, and like there's all these different ways that you can investigate just the different cultures within America and abroad too. I mean, I've done some traveling, and I'm sure I'd like to write about that at some point. So
yeah, you were in sub-Saharan Africa doing some HIV work, right?
Yeah, I was out there for a year.
Wow.
I think probably someday I'm going to write about that, but it's going to be a while still.
I'm amazed at what you do and what you've done. And you also, are you still doing the sex positive documentary film series in Chicago?
Yeah, here in Chicago, it's every second Tuesday. I started that in 2009. It really blew up. I initially thought that it would just be 9 months, but it turned into this like ongoing thing, and it's been super successful. And that's something else that you can find out about if you go to my website at ClariseThorne.com, or if you go to the Hull House Museum website at hullhousemuseum.org, because it takes place at the website for Jane Addams Hull House Museum, which is like a major feminist site here in Chicago. And it's just documentaries about sexuality, and it's always documentaries, and there's always a discussion group afterwards. So the idea is to sort of like actually focus on stuff that is really happening in the world with gender and sexuality, and give people a place to sort of process that information and understand it.
Yeah, you played Morty Diamond is one of my favorite people in the world, and
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Trans Entities is a tough documentary towards the end, especially for some people. And I was so excited to see that was one of the films that you showed at the Sex Positive documentary series.
Yeah, we had like a packed house for that one too. It was so funny because Morty Diamond actually mailed me. He just straight up mailed me a copy of that movie.
loved
when I was first putting on the series, and I was just like looking at this and I was like, oh my God, there is no way I can get away with this. But okay, like I'm already done. Like this is only going to last for 9 months anyway. Like, so whatever. So I sent him like this really nice note, like, thanks. But then, like, after it continued, after it had been around for a while, I was just like, maybe I can get away with this. Let's try it.
Oh, I'm so glad you could. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's intense, but I also think it does a really good look at, again, the communication we were talking about in the BDSM scene. And you write a lot about BDSM, and, I mean, I'm sure you will continue to have adventures there in the S&M world, and that those will be things that you think about and put into words, along with lots of other things. You travel to teach and do lectures, correct?
Yes, I do. I give them here in Chicago, and I also give them, I'm actually about to lecture next month at Beloit College here in Illinois, and then I'm going to go out to Bard University, Bard College out in New York, and I'm going to give a couple of lectures out there too. So totally call me. I'm very reasonably priced.
Absolutely. And you have information on your website about getting in touch with you on ClariseThorne.com. You can also follow you on Twitter at ClariseThorne, and that's ClariseThorn. I have a question, one other question for you, because I was like looking for pictures of you, of course. I'm like, what does she look like? You know, that's such a girl thing, but I'm admitting it.
I just don't release pictures of myself. There was one other thing that I wanted to mention too, since you were mentioning my S&M writing.
Yes.
Is that not only, you know, I have Confessions of a Pickup Artist Chaser, and that's out now, but I'm going to release a best of my blog as well. So for people who are, you know, I'll probably release like a free sampler or whatever, and then I'll probably release like an ebook version for like $5. So like, anybody who like wants to read through my blog, obviously it's free on the internet. You're welcome to do that. But it also, if you want to like have a nice ebook version, that's going to be out sometime in the next few weeks.
Please, everybody, check out. Oh, we'll give you a code too. So exciting. Check out Confessions of a Pickup Artist Chaser, Long Interviews with Hideous Men by Clarice Thorne. And you can pick it up either on Amazon.com for your Kindle. It will be out in a print edition soon. And even though it's going to be more expensive, I know it's totally worth it. And that's how I'm going to be getting my second copy. And also, you can get it on Smashwords and all different, that's smashwords.com, and there'll be links to everything.
Yes, and the coupon code for Smashwords for your readers who want to buy it is VJ66G.
That's VJ66G.
Yeah, and the coupon will be good through April 7th. And anyone who uses that to buy it on Smashwords will get the book for $5.
Thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure, and I can't wait to read more and meet you one day and talk more. I really enjoyed having this conversation. Clarice Thorne, please, everybody, Twitter, Clarice Thorne. There's no E at the end of Thorne, just in case. And follow her. Pick out, too. You're doing voting on your site for the best of blog right now, for your best of blogs, right?
Yeah, or just have people, you know, if you've read a entry at some point that you think was awesome, just leave it in a comment.
Wonderful. Clarice Thorne, thank you so much for being here. Confessions of a Pickup Artist Chaser, Long Interviews with Hideous Men is out now, and it's doing really well on Amazon, so you don't want to be left behind. It's a pleasure to talk with you, and best of luck with everything, although I don't think you need luck.
Thank you so much, Jamie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
I don't care whether you hear this. I don't care if I'm alone here singing songs to myself. There's nobody else around.